happy Chanukah and happy Parshat Miketz. We're back to the story of Yosef. I don't know if you recall where we left him last week. Yosef, at the end of last week, was forgotten. And it was with emphasis, not just forgotten. He was forgotten and not remembered, or not remembered and forgotten. The Midrashim go out of the way to say that that was somehow part of a divine decree, and Rashi likes that approach, even though it has problems with it. I mean, Rashi essentially says that Yosef's being punished for asking this fellow to help him get out, and it really is quite mysterious, because, you know, in what way is this any different from the, you know, the person who prays to God and God said, you know, the various jokes, you know, use the paddle or whatever, you know, just waiting for something else. So what's the matter? I mean, we all have to have some degree of what's called hishtadlus, or if you speak Hebrew, hishtadlut, that we try. So why is that not considered trying? What exactly is the matter with what he did? I'm going to sidestep this. I spoke about it once, so I'm not going to on that issue itself, but it really is troubling. We want to go back and to take a look at Yosef and to analyze what it was that he said and the position that he's in. So we're going to start from the very end of last week's parsha. V'yachar dvirma eila chatzu mashkei melech Mitzrayim v'ha'ufa l'adoneim l'melech Mitzrayim. So it starts off with ministers having done something which they're going to be punished for. What it is that they did that the text is silent. Now Yosef is in this prison. But we have to be careful. Back at the end of, a little bit before this, we were told that he was put into the prison of the political prisoners. So that's extremely interesting, because Yosef should have been, I don't know, was he a political prisoner? So why was he put there? And I think that the answer is that his boss, Mr. Potiphar, knew what Yosef's capabilities were. And I want you to consider this for a second. If he didn't know Yosef's capabilities, he should have killed him. I mean, why don't you kill somebody who does things like this? Although one of the sources we didn't get to last week was that it speaks about the behavior of the Egyptians, things that the Egyptians did later on in Vayikra. It says not to follow the practice of the Canaanites or of the Egyptians, which was interesting because Yehuda was then involved with the Canaanite. He married a Canaanite, and his children probably, at least to some extent, were Canaanites, and the behavior of the Canaanites is right there staring at you in the Yehuda story. On the other hand, we have now Yosef involved with the Egyptians and that poor behavior. So the verses that we read in Vayikra about the inappropriate behaviors, which, again, just to remember, is said within the context of all of the sexual sins which take place. So it's interesting that that's the place that we hear about the Egyptians. One of the things that the Midrashim say is that in Egypt it was acceptable for a woman to have two husbands, which then makes the Yosef story all the more interesting, which means, did Mrs. Potiphar do something wrong? When I say wrong now, we'll be more careful. Was she guilty of doing something which perhaps was inappropriate in terms of Egyptian society? So, you know, when you say again, so why didn't you kill him? Of course he should have killed him, but when you say that you're coming from your sophisticated Western modern perspective, and it could be that the quote-unquote primitive Eastern or Middle Eastern perspective maybe perhaps had been different. So, as I said, I hesitate there, although my gut feeling also is it's quite strange, especially considering the disparity in terms of power. Because this is the man, Sar HaTabachim, again, I keep saying this, Sar HaTabachim, Onkelos writes, he was the chief executioner. That's why he has a prison. The political prisoners are put there. I'm not sure to call them, are these people ministers? Not really ministers. These people are functionaries within the royal house. They therefore probably are privy to all kinds of pieces of information that does make them somewhat dangerous. So therefore, you don't just fire them, because then they're going to write a book. They'll call a press conference. They're going to then reveal the secrets of what happened in that particular Paro's White House or whatever. So you put them in the political prison, because there's a danger to them. So my first question is, was Yosef's position in this prison the same position as these people? Which means Yosef works for the Sar HaTabachim, for Potiphar, and these people work for Paro. So is this essentially a relationship of equals? And the quick answer to that is absolutely not. It wasn't that Yosef was just in the same prison with them. So let's read the words, because we need to understand this. Vayitenotam b'mishmar beit sar ha-tabachim el beit ha-sohar makom asher Yosef asur sham, the place that Yosef is imprisoned. So the first thing that we hear, yeah, Yosef is in this prison, but read the next verse, Dalid. Vayifkod sar ha-tabachim et Yosef itam, Yosef is placed there by the sar ha-tabachim, vayisharet otam, Yosef's job is to serve them, which means Yosef is a servant. Never forget that. He is a servant. He is a servant of the Tabachim, and now he's a servant in prison. So these guys are, again, they're ministers, or they're functionaries, and now they're in prison. So prison's the most horrific place, but guess what? They got a guy working for them in prison. And who's the guy? That's Yosef. So therefore, in terms of the hierarchy over here, it's really interesting. Yosef, on the one hand, is put in charge of the prison, and on the other hand, Yosef, by being in charge, is serving. And just to pause for a moment, there is a direct parallel here between what happens here versus what has happened back in Yosef's home, the home dynamics. Yosef is definitely in charge. He's the chosen one. He's the favorite one. When it says that Hunar b'nei Bila b'nei Zilpa, there are those who say that Na'ar means that he worked for them, as he served them. And there's actually a real good verse that one could use, which uses the same terminology, and it's even better because it's a descendant of Yosef who serves as a Na'ar for Moshe. And that's Yoshua. So Yeshua is the one who serves Moshe, and just think about that. Is there a better job than that? No, you're a servant. According to when Midrash, he used to set up all the chairs before the lecture. But is there a better job? I remember once Rabbi Soloveitchik said to us, he goes, "Oh, you think I'm so special. I'm the Rav. You think that I'm..." He says, "You don't understand that if I lived during the time of the Vilna Gaon, they wouldn't have let me sweep up the Beis Medrash before Shabbos." Right? I would not have been on the level to be a shamus in that shul to clean up the dirt. So he says, just realize who, you know, what the Vilna Gaon is, and you know what greatness is. So to be able to be like Yeshua and to sweep up the dirt in Moshe's Beis Medrash, that's pretty impressive. Yosef is in charge, and his idea of in charge, this is a very strange idea of leadership, is that the responsibility of a leader is to take care of the people that they are leading. And therefore, Yosef is in charge by virtue of taking care of his brothers, especially the ones that he feels are vulnerable. So again, if that interpretation is correct, then you see a direct parallel over here. Yosef's in charge of the prison. And what does it mean, in charge of the prison? It means that you now serve the people that are there, which you would have thought, no, being in charge means everybody serves you. And then we know what happens next is these people have these dreams, and in these dreams, they're quite disturbed by the dreams. And let's pay careful attention to what Yosef says, and this is in verse Chet, Pasuk Chet. Vayom lov chalom chalamnu upoter einoto. We've had a dream and we don't know what it means. I said, I don't know about you. By the time I wake up in the morning, long gone. Not another second. Not interpretations. I don't need to know what it means. I don't need to go to a psychologist, an analyst, or someone else. I had a dream. I don't know what it means. It means that you were sleeping and your subconscious was still working. So, okay. But they don't know what it means. And Yosef says, Vayomer lehem Yosef, Halo le'elohim pitronam sapru na li. God has the answers. Tell me. Now, this is Yosef. And that little phrase there is so complex. But the complexity of this phrase is actually the whole class today. But that I mean, this is it. That's all I'm saying today, is that one verse. But maybe I'll take a little time trying to explain it. Why is it complex? It's complex, first of all, because Yosef says there is an answer, there is an explanation. The dreams have significance. And that's something that from the beginning to the end of the Yosef story, dreams have significance. Actually, there's another thing about dreams in the Yosef story. They're not just that they have significance. There's another element. And what's that element? They all come true. The dreams come true. But Yosef said, God provides the answers. Halo l'Elohim epitrona. Now, this is not the first time that Yosef has spoken about God. Yosef may speak about God more than any other character in Sefer Bereishit. I'll give you homework. You can go and count to try to prove me wrong on this. But in his conversation with Paro that takes place at the beginning of this week's parasha, there are numerous references to God as well, to the point that Paro starts to echo them and speaking about God as well, which is completely preposterous in terms of Paro's position of being an imagined deity. So why is he talking about God? Because Yosef's charisma is completely overwhelming, and Yosef convinced him in a matter of moments. I mean, that's what's unbelievable. Yosef can convince Paro in a matter of moments that there's a God and there's a plan and that there was somebody watching and the future is understood and will take place like this. And he totally buys into it, but let's pause on that for a moment. Okay, I'm going to hold on. That's exactly the point, correct? Hold on to that for a moment. This is not the first time Yosef has mentioned God. Where did he do it before? He did it in a very unfortunate situation. People should have told him to be quiet. This woman is hitting on him, and why is he talking about God? Right? But Yosef right then, this... Your husband trusts me, so this would be wrong morally in terms of the position I've been entrusted with. And on top of that, this would be a sin against God. I mean, the moralizing of Yosef is fantastic. This is reminiscent of Avram Avinu saying to Avimelech, you know, what were you thinking? And he says, you know, Ein yirat Elokim b'makom hazeh. But Avimelech says it to the guy who was trying to hit on his wife. Yosef says it to the woman who's hitting on him. So it's not exactly the same. Because Avram's going to be full of anger and, again, moralizing to this person who's done something wrong. And Yosef stops and says no, and continually says no. Again, just read the text. Day after day after day after day, she's hitting on him, and Yosef says no. And finally she grabs him, and Yosef says no. This would be wrong. It's morally wrong in terms of my relationship with your husband, and it's morally wrong in terms of my relationship with God. And again, no one else is in the room. He's not playing to the crowd. He may not have known that God is going to give us a Torah and have this narrative written in the Torah. I mean, the Midrashim say this about Reuven. Had Reuven known that would have been in the Torah, then he would have, you know, worked so much harder to make it happen. The people who are players in the scenes, they don't know that all this is going to be written down. Nonetheless, Yosef acts, you know, it's dramatic, and it's sincere, and it's real, and God is part of his consciousness. That's the important thing. God is part of his consciousness. But this absolutely delicious turn of phrase that we just now saw. Halo l'Elohim pitronam sapru nali. God has the answers, tell me. Hold it, who are you? So this complexity is the complexity of Yosef. Because Yosef has absolute confidence. Yosef knows the future. Yosef always knows the future. Yosef is so many steps past everyone else because he knows what's going to happen. But how does he know what's going to happen? So ostensibly because of the dreams, we'll limit at that for now, but maybe more than that. But tell me. Now, the question over here is, when it actually will work out, who is it that this Sar HaMashkim thinks was the one who gave the interpretation? Or who was it who actually made this happen? Is this God has the pitronam, or is this Yosef? And that's not an easy question. But then Yosef gives the interpretation. He's going to be returned to his job. And then Pasuk Yudalid. Ki im zechertani itcha kashe yitavlach vasita na imadi chesed. Vizkertani el paro Votzitani min habayit hazeh. Ki ganav gunav gunavti mi'eretz ha'evrim v'gam po lo asiti mu'uma ki sami oto babor. The bor over here is actually very, very good, because the bor is both the pit he was put in and the prisons in Egypt are also referred to as a bor. When Yosef is taken out, when they go and they get him, they take him out of the bor. If you just quickly look in the next source, Pasuk Yudalid, Vayishlach Paro v'yikral Yosef v'yiritzu min habor. They take him out of the bor. So the bor is the prison, which now you realize that the bor may have double meanings. And which one did Yosef mean over here? I was thrown in a pit. Does he mean I was thrown in the pit? I was thrown in the prison. And as I said, that's also not clear. Yosef over here, and maybe only over here, of all the times he's going to speak, and it is certainly worthwhile to take every single time that Yosef speaks. He's one of the characters that speaks more than anyone else in Sefer Bereishit. And to take all of Yosef's speeches and monologues and dialogues and to analyze them and to look and to see, there's something over here that can be read as vulnerability. See, the first verse, again, is interesting. Yudalit is interesting. Ki im zachartani itach. You know, if you're going to remember me, which would be very good for you to do, and it would be very compassionate of you for you to do this, mention me to Paro and take me out of this place. So it's interesting. Here, min habayit hazeh. So this, he refers to this as the bayit, which may lend to the interpretation that the bor is actually the pit that he was thrown into. But when he gets to this verse, there's also something absurd. If the Sara Mashkim comes to the understanding that it really was Yosef who has saved him, and he's going to be thankful for it, so maybe the right answer to, or the right expression over here of Yosef should have been, have a word with the Sara Tabachim. Or maybe even, I'm a slave, I'm sitting over here in prison, you know how talented I am, buy me, release me, I'll work for you, get me out of here. Which is Yosef's job in this prison, is he's serving the people here, you know, we're a good team, I can keep on interpreting your dreams for you. So it's very interesting, Yosef doesn't go that way. But rather, what does Yosef do? Yosef says, oh, mention me to Paro, let him know that I'm here. That is so interesting. Straight to the top. Let Paro. So now, is it, and you can go either way that you want, is it that Yosef reads the political map, and he reads it correctly, and says, the only person who can outflank the guy who threw me in here, the only guy who gave me the presidential pardon, is Paro, so go mention to Paro. But why in the world would Paro care? Oh, there's a prisoner in prison who says he's innocent. Okay. That's certainly a unique phenomenon. So the question over here, that's exactly my point. Is Yosef dealing over here with, again, this is real politic, an analysis of the situation. The only person who has leverage over the guy who put him in prison is Paro himself. So go to Paro, mention that I'm here. What? Like what's Paro going to care? Oh, and then he goes further, because I'm innocent. I was kidnapped. Okay. I was kidnapped and sold as a slave. Okay, that would make Yosef completely unique in antiquity. He's the only person who's ever been kidnapped and sold off as a slave. So, who cares? I'm sorry for saying this, but I'm just trying to channel my inner Paro. Who cares? So you're going to go tell Paro this. So what in the world is Yosef doing unless, and this is now comes to this scary thought, unless Yosef absolutely sees, this is manifest destiny. Because Yosef knows he's getting to the top. Yosef never loses faith. Yosef knows it's going to happen. And therefore Yosef essentially is saying, and now you're going to tell me he can't be saying this, but that doesn't bother me at all. Yosef is saying, set up the appointment because Paro is going to be asking for me. Let him know I'm here. Now you're going to say, but that's ridiculous. And I'm going to say, yeah, but that's exactly what happens. And Yosef always correctly knows exactly what's going to happen. So if Yosef knows what's going to happen, so then how absurd is this? What's the matter, Stu? I find that Rashi difficult, and I will therefore ignore it. The only thing that I'll say is that maybe it's not time yet. It's not time. There are some midrashim that try to analyze the amount of time that Yosef may need to be purged of any sins, real or imagined, that he has done, maybe for the Lashon Hara he told on his brothers and so on. But that doesn't concern me right now. What I'm saying is what Yosef says over here, again, everything he says is so full of this complexity. God interprets the dreams, tell me them. Go tell Paro that I'm here. And as I said, I'm embellishing this. I'm guilty, okay? I know this. I'm guilty for embellishing this. But I'm just trying to understand how Yosef is actually saying it. Yeah, that's the last source, almost the last source. We're holding off on that, but okay, go ahead. 26, Yud Kei Vav Kei, yes. So there was one person in the narrative who does say he's a Navi, according to Unkelus, and that's Paro. Paro calls him, you read that Unkelus? Twice? Okay. So, yes. Paro, when he's listening, says Ruach. He uses the word Ruach. We have such a man who has Ruach, the Spirit of God, and he says Navi. He says that, is there such a person who understands prophecy, understands what's going on? So according to the Egyptian official records, according to Unkelus, he was absolutely a Navi. I was thinking the same thing on my way here this morning. To what extent is this dream, to what extent is Yosef a prophet, or to what extent is Yosef simply knows the future? And you know, there's always this lower level, and certainly dreams are a lower level, but Yosef seems to see his dreams with greater clarity than some prophets see their prophecies. It's absolute clarity. He knows what's going to happen, which is why I'm going to say it again. I come back to this verse over here when he said, and again, I know I said that in the beginning, that Rashi says he's destined for another 2 years because of some terrible thing he did over here. I don't know what the terrible thing is. Is it trusting this person, or is that moment of vulnerability? I never did anything wrong. I was kidnapped. They threw me in this bar. Nonetheless, I will absolutely ignore this. But Yosef says this. This is what's great. Yosef says this right away. This is the dream. This is what's going to happen. You're going to get out. You're going to get your job back. Go tell Paro that I'm here and I was kidnapped. And I'm saying, and in real time as you're reading that, the whole thing's an absurdity, except Yosef is right about everything that he says. Paro does let him out. He does kill the other guy. And so I want to go back to the Sahar Mashkim. How does he look at Yosef? Because there is this unbelievable power in Yosef. Why does he forget Yosef? Why doesn't he say, wow, you know, again, if I were him, I would get Yosef out of prison. I would hire him. I would have him work the stock market for me. I don't know what I would do. He'd be in charge of the investments. Just think a second about this. Why does he leave him behind? Why does he forget him? And the answer, I think, is that Yosef is scary. I mean, it goes back to the same point that we're getting to before. What were we getting to before? That's really good English, right? We don't even know where I'm going now. I'm going backwards. It's the same point that I made before. And what is it? That why doesn't Potiphar kill him when he does something which would seem to be a killable offense? And what's that? Is that his wife claims that this man abused me. So therefore, why would the chief executioner not take out his chief executioner tools and execute him chiefly? I mean, kill him in many ways. The man's a professional. He knows how to make people suffer and die. Oh no, that's okay. Put him in the prison and put him in charge of the prison. Have him work in the prison. He doesn't want to let go of him. Why let go of Yosef? Because he knows from the second Yosef got there, he's been absolutely successful. And maybe if he does the wrong thing to Yosef, Yosef is this unknown, powerful, scary individual by these people that meet him. Of course, except for his brothers, which maybe we need to ask that question as well. Do the brothers identify, is the same ambiguity there in terms of the brothers? Do the brothers know Yosef's capability, or do the brothers absolutely miss the capability? And what I'm asking that is, when they say, let's take him and let's kill him, because, and then we'll see if the dreams come true, you have to kill him? I mean, if you think he's so insignificant, you think he's so untalented, you think he can't do anything, so why kill him? Let's watch this. Let's watch and see how these dreams are not going to come true. You only kill him if you think he's an unbelievable threat. And then they decide, no, Yosef, these dreams cannot come true, and therefore we will guarantee they won't come true. We're going to sell him off as a slave. Of course, the great irony is you sell him as a slave. They didn't realize that all of them and their children and grandchildren end up being sold his slaves as a repercussion of that same exact behavior, but we'll sell him as a slave. Why sell him as a slave? In order to make a point. And what's the point? Yosef is not great. Yosef is a slave. Why do you have to prove that? You only have to prove it because you deep inside don't believe that it's true. I mean, if somebody is really incapable, do you have to prove it to them? I'm going to show you? No. What difference does it make? I'm going to be great. Okay. You're going to bow down to me. No problem. Which means the jealousy which morphs, and maybe it's a better word than morphs, it metastasizes into hatred. But you're only jealous of somebody when you know that that person is something to be jealous of. And it keeps going back. Sin'ah and then the kin'ah. 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 It's the kin'ah then the sin'ah. And kin'ah, just in case you never knew this, it's actually a fascinating midrash that perhaps may be part of this and may be part of what that midrash is really saying. There's a midrash that says that everything that happened to Yosef happened to Zion, Tzion. It's Midrash Tanchuma. That Yosef is beautiful and Tzion is beautiful. But Yosef was the victim of jealousy and therefore of hatred. And Zion is the victim of jealousy and therefore hatred. What you don't catch when the Midrash says this, and this is absolutely what the Midrash is saying, is that Yosef in Gematria, for those of you who hate your Gematriot, bite your tongues now, because you'll have to do tshuva, because Yosef in Gematria is Tzion. And Yosef in Gematria is kin'ah, jealousy. 156. 156. So, you know, just like whenever you hear about Esav kin'ah, 156. Yosef, 156. Tzion, 156. Okay? So, yes. And you don't have to add one like for your mother-in-law. Like, this is like a real one. So just like when the Midrash talks about Esav, sometimes you're a little careful. Are we speaking about Esav or are we talking about Rome? When it talks about Yosef, are you talking about Yosef or are you talking about Zion? And once you're talking about Zion, then you say, is one of the reasons for the Galut because we trusted ministers from other countries? We trusted prime ministers, we trusted others, or maybe we should have our trust in God, or maybe that's the reason why a galut goes on, because Jews went and they turned to the various sar hamashkims over the years, people who could are in charge of intoxication and not in charge of liberation and so on, which means I'm saying is that once you realize that the Midrash is making that analysis with Yosef, then you have to be a lot more careful with what this Midrash is saying. Oh, Yosef was punished and stayed in prison a couple of years. Is that talking about Yosef or is that talking about Zion? Oh, 1 second. You didn't see that coming, did you? Can you all admit that you didn't see that coming? Good, yes. 100%. That's what it means. Tzion. Tzion is now in prison in Egypt. I mean, that's exactly the point. That's the beginning of the Galut. So, now that you realize that there may be other levels to this, that's why you have to be careful sometimes when the Midrashim make statements like this, because you're reading, hold it, what did the biblical Yosef do wrong by trusting this person? And it's really interesting now to read it differently. That's his only way out. So now you say the same thing about the Jewish people, or Am Yisrael, or Medinat Yisrael. So who is it that we should be trusting, and who is it that we should be making our agreements with, and so on. And I'm not making any political statements now, even though you think I am. I'm really not. I'm just stating how perhaps this can or should be understood. You can leave now? That's enough? You already got what you came for today. Okay. You guys are so easy. So this is it. You got something to say Friday night now, right? Let's continue. When Yosef says, God has the interpretation, tell it to me. So how was that then, what would the word be? Perceived or distilled. That was what I was looking for. How was, we'll talk about the Sar HaMashkin. So how was that distilled and how was that understood? So in Pasuk Kaf Bet, Vetzara Ofim Tala, Kasher Patar Lem Yosef. And again, it says the same thing before that, but it's Kasher Patar Lem Yosef, as Yosef. So is that, what's that as? Is the as causative or is the as descriptive? Which means, well, Yosef said what was going to happen, or is it worse than that? Source number two, we finally get to this week's parsha. And Paro has a dream. And Paro's dream troubles him. And it troubles him to the extent that he is troubled. And he asks everyone for an interpretation, and nobody gives him what he feels to be a satisfactory interpretation. Source 2, Pasuk Tet, V'deber Sar HaMashkim. But he is called Sar. That's what's interesting. I guess that tells you the priorities. The drink minister. I like that. Okay. V'deber Sar HaMashkim et Paro Lemor, et Chatai ani maskir hayom. It's also needs to be noted is that his sins are said in plural, being that we have no idea what he did. Does this describe what he did to be thrown into prison? Or is one of his sins that he's about to admit to is that he knows Yosef? Because just think about that for a second, how that plays out. I asked a couple of minutes ago, does he know Yosef's capabilities? And the answer is, yeah, of course he knows Yosef's capabilities. Did he forget them? Well, he certainly did, but question is why? Because Yosef is too scary. Because when he makes this introduction to Paro, okay, there's this guy I want you to meet. Paro at some point is going to turn to him, right? You know, as he's pouring that Chardonnay late in the afternoon, before dinner Chardonnay, he's going to be saying to him, can you explain to me why you never introduced me to Yosef before? I mean, he's the single most impressive person that Paro has ever met. I'm sorry. I mean, I know you're going to say, can you prove that? What I will say, if you follow the math, Yosef stands in front of Paro at the age of 30, dies at 110. So for a good 80 years, Yosef rules Egypt, and he turns it into an economic powerhouse. He saves Egyptian society. So I think there's reason for Paro to one day ask his Sar HaMashkim, why did you never make this introduction before? So it could be at Chata'ai Ani Maskir Hayom includes what I'm about to tell you. You know, you think I did something wrong before, there's another thing that I did. And then he continues, that's the way that he phrases it, and he says, Paro katsaf al avadav. Paro got mad. It's also interesting. There he doesn't say I did anything wrong. Right? But Paro got mad. V'yitein oti b'mishpar, and he threw me into this prison, beit tzara tabachim, oti v'et tzara afim. We both had our dreams the same night. Yud bet v'sham itanu, and there with us, Na'ar, Ivri, Eved, L'sar HaTabachim, V'nisaperlo. So there was this Na'ar. So again, we have to wonder if the word Na'ar means somebody really young or somebody who's a servant. Going back to Na'ar B'nei Bilo B'nei Zilpa, going back to Yehoshua, who was a Na'ar. So this may well be servant. Na'ar Eved, Na'ar Ivri, Eved, L'sar HaTabachim. So therefore, he is a slave in servant in the prison. V'nisaper lo, and we told him our dream. V'yiftor lanu et chalamotenu, and he interpreted our dreams. Ish kachlamo patar. And pasuk yud gimel is this difficult pasuk again. V'yihi kasher patar lanu kein haya, as he interpreted, so it was. Oti heishiv al kani v'oto tala. He returned me to my position and he caused the other to be killed. Now, I just now read it, I think, in the simplest way to translate what the words actually said. And therefore, what's frightening about what he said is he's standing in front of Paro. Paro would like to believe that he's an intelligent adult. And Paro would like to believe that he's made some decisions in his life. And one of the decisions that Paro made is that the Sar HaOfim, right, we don't need him anymore, we'll get rid of him, right? We don't trust him, he's half-baked, right? We get rid of, if he could be distilled, he's half, right? We get rid of him, he's replaceable, and he'll be killed, and on the other hand, the Sar HaMashkim will be returned, and Paro, and you're standing in front of Paro now saying, yeah, Paro, you think you made that call? Well, you didn't. Now, I don't know exactly how you say that, to Paro. And now, watch what Rashi does, because Rashi's going to tell me There's no way in the world he could have said that. Why couldn't he have said that? Because it's too preposterous. And as much as we like to interpret things, sometimes you just can't say, it can't possibly be that he said this. So look at Rashi in source 3. Heshiv al kani, paro haniskar lamalo. It's paro did. We have a dangling something or other over here, and it's paro is the one who returned. Kemosh amar paro katzaf alavadav. Hare mikra katzar lashon. And he says, well, there's actually a couple words missing, and it may not sound like this, but of course that's what it means. Velo perash mi heshiv. It didn't say who's the one who returned me to my job. Lefisha ain tzarech lefaresh. It doesn't have to say it. Mi heshiv. Who could it possibly be? Misha v'yado, the person who has the capability, Lashiv, who paro, and that's paro. Do you love how hard Rashi is working to tell you that the pasuk doesn't say what it says? I did not read anything into Rashi. That's what he says. Rashi says it has to be paro because who else could it possibly be? And it, of course it's paro, and there's some words missing, Lashon Katsar. There's some words missing in this verse. You need to add the words and to add to words to say that which it You're not gonna help me. That which it doesn't say. The Rashbam says the same thing. Oti hishiv hamelech. It has to be the king. Now, the truth is, I love the Ibn Kaspi in source 5 because it may actually be true. He writes, Oti hishiv al kani vototala hayoter nachonetzli. I mean, you realize I took this out of a larger discussion. Shiyur mosli yosef. He hinted that it was Yosef, which means that he said it in a way that could have been interpreted in either way. I don't know exactly how that works, but I like that in the sense that at least he's presenting the possibility. Now, why would he at least have to present the possibility? Because we all know exactly what the Sar HaMashkim knows, and that is when Paro meets Yosef, Yosef is going to tell him what happened and what's going to happen in the future and so on. And again, how much of this is Yosef as a prophet and how much of this is Yosef having predict or creating the future? That's really self-fulfilling prophecies taking place. If you want to see, again, the other side of this, the Targum HaMiyuchas LeYonatan in source 6, we can read the Hebrew in 7 and the Keter Yonatan. V'hi kamosha patar lona kachaya oti hishiv bidvarav, or the Targum wrote bimile. His words are what created this. His words are what determined that I would, in fact, be returned to my position. And now again, the scary part, because this is what's scary about Yosef, and it was his words that determined that the Sar Ofim would be killed. Yosef had him killed. And you're saying, hold it, how can I say such a thing? And the answer is, I just said that. And the reason why I just said that is because that's what that is actually what he said. And as I said, it's scary. The Ibn Ezra plays with this, the Baal HaTurim. Well, Baal HaTurim says, Kasher Patar, Begematria, do I have yet on the Gematria? Shechalamotu Chimacha Harpeh. That dreams are based upon the interpretation. Now, where does he get that from? Well, you see in the little parentheses afterwards, Brachot Nunhei. We're not going to have time to look at it today, but I provided for you in sources 13 and 14, both the Bavli and the Rishalmi bring down interpretations that say that that dreams are based upon the interpretation of the person who says it. So therefore, you go to somebody for a dream interpretation, whatever they tell you, that's what the dream meant. Now, is that a question, again, of that the interpreter has certain power, and the power is, well, is the power because it's real, or is the power because they just convinced you that it's real? Just to note, even though we see among the Rishonim this leaning, like Rashi goes away from saying that it could have been Yosef, the Malbim in 10 and the Netziv in 11 and the Nachat Yaakov in 12, all of them have no problem saying, but it's a black and white Gemara. And the Gemara quotes these verses. The Gemara says that Yosef is the one who determined what was going to happen based upon his dream interpretation, although I'll be forthcoming in source number 14, where the Gemara actually does say this. If you look in the middle there, I said we weren't going to read it. We will read it, the end of it, not the whole thing. It's the very middle where it's underlined, the last line, 14. Ukedu Rabbi Elazar, the Amar Rabbi Elazar, minayin shekol hachamalot hochanach harapeh. How do we know that dreams or errors are based on interpretation? Shenemar vayihi kasher patar lanu kein haya. So Rashi, for all that he was protesting and saying that's not what it means, well, guess what? Rabbi Elazar and Gemara Brachot thinks that's what it means. And I said, this is not the only place. The Yerushalmi also as well. Even though there's another voice in the Gemara at the very last line, Amar Vishumo Bar Nachmani, Amar Rav Yonatan, Ein Marin Lo La'adam Eler Mehurei Libo. The dreams are basically an expression of the subconscious of somebody, of what was going on in their mind and so on, and therefore that's what they're going to be dreaming about, although very often in symbolic terms. So, what's the complexity, just to make sure that we're all focused? The complexity is that Yosef can give credit to God, and nonetheless people hear that it's Yosef. And Yosef can be very sincere, this is God. If we look at Source 15, this was the long-awaited, almost reunification of Yosef and his brothers. Well, I say almost reunification, they meet, but they don't unify. They meet, and only one side knows what's going on, and of course that's always going to be the story with Yosef. Yosef always knows more than the people that he's speaking to. And Yosef accuses them of being spies. Yosef, and this we've discussed, right, in length in previous years, Yosef is practically begging them to figure out who he is, and they are incapable of it, because how can it be Yosef? Yosef, it's absurd. Yosef is a slave. We sold him as a slave. Even though deep in their subconscious, they should know that Yosef has capability, because that's always what frightened them. So again, so from the beginning, we always have this, we know who he is, and we're jealous of who he is, and we're scared of who he is, and so on. And over here, after Yosef meets them, and he accuses them of being spies, and the reason he accuses them is because they act in such a bizarre way. They talk too much. Any of you, if you should ever be arrested, you know when the police say to you, at least in America, you have the right to remain silent. Anything that you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. Do you realize that if you actually thought about that sentence, they're giving you advice, and what's the advice? Right? Okay, let me think about this. You have the right to remain silent, and anything you say can and will be used against you. So what should I do then? And the brothers can't do this. And this is true all the way through. Again, if you analyze the narratives or the dialogues, they can't do this. They're incapable of doing this. And that's why Yosef's able to accuse them of being spies. Yosef says to them, where are you from? And they said, we're from Canaan. We came to buy food. Should they do that again? Where are you from? We're from Canaan. We're from Canaan. We came to buy food. How interesting. Standing on a food line and they're here to buy food. Why in the world do you talk so much? They should have. Do you have to practice this? Where are you from? What's the answer? We are from Canaan. What should you say after the word Canaan? We're from Canaan. We're here to buy food. Ah. Why do you have to tell me you're here to buy food? And the Yosef right away says, you're spies. No. And then they start going to, we're all brothers, and there's another brother, and there's another brother. Why are you saying these things? Be quiet. I mean, that's why Yosef's able to be so suspicious about them and saying, something's not right over here. And something's not right because something's not right over there. And Yosef says, you people are acting in a bizarre way and you're spies and I'm throwing you in prison. And there is a shift that takes place. Initially he says, and we're in Source 15 now, initially he says that I'm going to put all of you in prison and one of you go back and bring this other fictitious brother of yours. And then afterwards Yosef, after 3 days of leaving them there, Yosef then does something else. This is what you'll do and you will live. Et ha'elokim ani yare. I fear God. This is so great. Again, what is Yosef doing? Well, first of all, what he's doing is he's hinting who he is, but they're incapable or refuse to actually take this in. How in the world does some Egyptian minister coming and talking and saying, I fear God. Actually, did you hear his words? I fear God. You don't fear God. Can I tell you what's really going on over here? What's the difference between sending one back versus sending either all of them back or 9 of them back and leaving one behind? What's the difference between the two positions? And you're saying, well, it's 1 or 9, but there's actually another point over here. Why did they come to buy food? Is there a difference if one person goes back? How much food is one person taking? Does it make a difference if 9 people are going back? How much food are they taking? Which means if Yosef does not let them go back, what was the whole purpose of the mission to buy food? Why are they buying food? Because people without food could die. Who are the people that could die? All the people they left behind. Who are the people left behind? Well, their father and their wives and their children, and all these people being left without food are going to die. Anybody realize what's happening? I'll tell you what's happening. This is a direct response to what Reuven suggested. What was Reuven's suggestion? Don't kill him. It's very messy. Put him in the boar. And what happens when he's in the boar? He dies. Why does he die? Because he has no food. When you have no resources, no nutrition, you die. When you're put in a pit, you die. So Yosef puts them in a boar. He puts them in a pit. He puts them there for 3 days. And then he takes them out and he says, go home. Leave one guy behind because I fear God. And what's he saying? Who doesn't fear God? You don't fear God. You're willing to kill me. Again, basically, Yosef is a passive aggressive who's screaming at them and they don't hear anything that he says. I by the way, I'm not licensed to give any psychological diagnosis over here, but he is screaming at them and saying, hello, do you see me? I'm Yosef. But they can't see it. They refuse to see it. And here he says to them, I fear God. And again, this goes back to this complexity. It's wonderful what he just now did. What did he do? He's letting them go back and bring food. I mean, again, just in case you wonder, does anybody actually say this? Everyone says it except for one point. Nobody that I saw, at least, takes it back to the scene when he's in the pit. But instead they say, oh, he's going to tend to the food. But it's just a direct parallel. The Midrash in 16, et elokim ani yirei, da'agti min hachet, kol b'nei beitchem mitzapim aleichem lavi et ma yochlu, v'im tishahu kan shemi yamutu mirav. That I fear God, I don't want your whole families to die of starvation. And continuing, the Radak says it in 17, and the Bechor Shur in 18, and this Forno in 19, they all say the same thing, basically, that Yosef says, and I fear God, I don't want your families to die. But I'm just saying, with Yosef, there's nothing by accident. Everything is deliberate. Everything is well thought out. And everything has many, many levels of interpretation and is textured. Yosef, you have to be careful about with what he says and what he does and how he says it and how he does it. And over here, it was very clear before I said this to all of us that Yosef puts them in the prison. It's like him being in prison. Okay, that's good. But it's much more than that. He puts them in the prison and shows them that without food, people die, and there's a moral issue in this, and this is still murder. And then Yosef says, no, I fear God. So it's wonderful, because Yosef does fear God, but he has to tell people he fears God. He fears God, and did he really have to say to Eshet Potiphar, oh yeah, by the way, wasn't it enough to say, this is a sin against your husband, this would be a terrible breach of trust? But instead he has to say, this is a terrible breach of trust against your husband, and I fear God. But it's true he fears God, but he has to say he fears God. So then how do people take this? Again, I think it's wonderful and it's sincere, and Yosef doesn't know that one day this is going to be in the text of the Torah, that he comes out and says this. And Yosef, again, it really is parallel to Avram saying to Avimelech, right? Ein yirat Elokim b'makom hazeh. But over here, again, this is Yosef, full of fear of God, but he has to say it. So let's continue. When they come back the second time, after the money was in their, and again, I've referenced that before as well, Yosef puts the money in their bag when they leave, when they all go back. You have the brothers leave, they left one brother behind, just like the Yosef sale, the Yosef story. He puts the money in their bag, just like when the Yosef sale took place. They left a brother behind, but at least they had money in their bag. And Yosef is here again trying to jar that memory, trying to remind them of what they did. Again, every single act makes a difference over here. And when they finally come back the second time, they're afraid because of the money and so on. And even Yosef's guy in Pasuk Kaf Gimel in Source 20, Vayom Shalom Lachem Al Tirao, don't be afraid about the money that we found in the bag. Elo Keichem velokei avichem natan lechem matmon. Your God and the God of your father gave you a present. Why? Because you're such wonderful people and deserving of such presents. And, or it could be quite cynical. I know how much you love your money, and therefore, God made sure that you got your money. And of course, you can accuse all of this of anti-Semitic overtones, but we will ignore that right now. And then when Yosef meets Binyamin in Kaftet, Vayisaina Vayaret Binyamin Achiv Ben Imo, Vayomer hazeh achichem hakaton asher amartem elai. Vayomer Elokim yichoncha b'ni. May God find favor in you, my son. So again, Yosef talks about God. Now, some of this is real sincere, and some of this is going to be a setup. So let's get to our final scene of today and the final scene of this week's parsha. So at least you can't accuse me of not even speaking of this week's parsha, because I actually got into it at some point. In source 21, Yosef has this whole elaborate scheme of the cup being planted inside the bag of Binyamin. So pay attention to two elements right now. One is it's referred to the cup that he uses for divination, that he uses to tell the future. This is the secret of Yosef's success. It's the cup. But secondly, pay attention that actually, you know, you talk about a cup of salvation. There's a great symbolism here as well. What was it that served as the vehicle which facilitated Yosef's leaving the prison? It was actually the Sar HaMashkim. So Yosef may enjoy this level of symbolism that no one else may get. But again, it's the Sar HaMashkim there in the beginning, or the end of last week's parsha, the beginning of this week's parsha. And the Sar HaMashkim is the one who gets Yosef out. So I'm just going to again say the symbol of the cup, therefore, is quite interesting. And as we note this conversation, again, source 21, this Perek Mem Dalet, Vayomalem Yosef, Mama says, Esha Asitim, Halo Yadatim, Ki Nachesh Yunachesh Isha Sher Kamoni. Don't you know I didn't need the cup? I didn't need it. It was just like, that's just the word out. I use the cup. Yeah, why'd I use the cup? Because everybody knows the story. Again, I'm saying this right now. I'm not saying that this is what Yosef is saying, but I'm just showing you the symbolism. Because everybody knows the way that Yosef was saved from the prison was because of the Sar HaMashkim. So everyone thinks that the Sar HaMashkim is the one who serves the cup, and therefore Yosef is represented by the cup. And then Yosef says, I didn't need the cup. It's me. Now, what's surprising about this is that this is not the way that Yosef has spoken before. And that's why this should be a little scary. And now the reverse happens. And the reverse happens for a very simple reason. And let me explain this. This verse, when Yosef says, what did you do? Don't you know about my capability? The reason why this is so scary is because Yosef has been setting them up the whole time. What's the setup? Setup has been, I fear God. I'm a decent person. I'm a fair person. I'm a moral person. And then when they get caught with this money, oh no, God must have given you a present. Again, I'm God-fearing, and I believe that God gives you a present. God takes care of you. So the whole time, Yosef has articulated this moral posture. Actually, Rabbi Soloveitchik said something which I believe to be absolutely remarkable. He said that when Yaakov hears that they're selling food in Egypt, he doesn't see this merely as a way of getting food and solving a problem. He sees this as being completely out of the ordinary. Why? Because if you think about antiquity, if you have resources and your neighbors don't, so what do? You wait for them to get weakened and you destroy them, you capture them. Meaning this would have been the perfect time and opportunity for somebody who thought a little differently. Also, if you remember your uncle this week, it says that Paro puts him in charge of everything. One of the things it says of it, nobody can lift up a hand without him. It says there in the uncle is a weapon. Nobody can take arms. Yosef is the Sar HaPnim. Yosef is in charge of the Ministry of Interior, and he's in charge of who gets a gun license. Nobody can get weapons without Yosef, which is really an interesting comment, but it exactly goes to the point what I'm saying now. Yosef is ultimately in charge of the army as well. So Yosef now has all of this power, money, resources, and what do you do with it? It's obvious what you do with this. You use this to capture every single country around you. And what does Yosef do? Retail. We're opening up stores. We're making a lot of money. I mean, you have to love this. Just think of all the Jews over the years, right? We're going into retail. And he turns to Paro, listen, I got an idea. I got a plan over here. We're all going to be making a lot of money over this. What I'm saying is that you just look at this. It's the money. This is fascinating because there's another element to this. He doesn't use the power that he can use. Now, this is on a macro level. On a micro level, the same thing is true in terms of Yosef's interpersonal relationships. He has this power, but he doesn't use it. He could kill his brothers, but instead what does he do? He takes care of them. Should I say that again? Yosef could kill his brothers, but he takes care of them. The macro is what Rabbi Soloveitchik noted, is that Yosef sets up a moral society whereby the weak are taken care of, the weak are going to be receiving food, and a society which reflects the values of Avram Avinu in terms of ethical monotheism. If Avram opens up his tent and gives food for the people that are coming and traveling, now notice what Yosef did. He takes the dream of Avraham and he turns it into the policy of an empire. So Yaakov is looking at this and saying, who in the world could possibly have taken Avram Avinu's vision and turned it into the way that a country operates? And of course, what's the answer that nobody knows? The answer is your favorite child, your prized student, your prodigy, who all those lessons that you said all those years ago, that who knows what happened to Yosef, and who knows the way that Rashi and Chazal have to insist by Yaakov, right? I've been away a bit. Aval tariag mitzvot shamarti, right? It's a wonderful thing. In lovon garti v'tariag mitzvot shamarti. Don't worry, I kept my ethical stance. So as much as the Rashi has to read this into Yaakov, with Yosef, it's staring at you. It's staring at you, what Yosef just now did. Yosef succeeded beyond anybody's imagination. It's not just that he ran Egypt. He ran Egypt in this remarkable way, and now again realize, there's the micro and the macro. And the micro goes back to his brothers. And all along the way, he's been telling his brothers, no, I'm a moral person, I'm an ethical person, I fear God, God has blessed you, and so on, which there's a setup over here. Because the setup is that the next line should be, the cup was in your thing, sorry, those accidents happened, and it happened before, and it happened again, and God must have liked you, and God took care of you, and God gave you money, and God did this, and I fear God, I'm not going to do anything to you. And then Yosef instead says, he's supposed to say it's God here. And he goes, no, it's me. It's always been me. And that's the most scary thing that they can possibly hear. You know how well it works? Look at Yehuda's response. In source 21, Vayomer Yehuda, Manu Marla Adoni, what can I say? Man deber, man et tzadak. I hope you recognize that phraseology. We use it when we say slichot. Ha'elokim matzat avon avadecha. God found our sin. Why is Yehuda now talking about God? I think it's the first time Yehuda talks about God. Even before Tzadka Mimeni, now he's talking about God. Why is he saying God? Because he expected Yosef to say God in the last verse, and he didn't. He was supposed to say, I fear God, and therefore I'm not doing anything. And instead he said, what God? He didn't say that, by the way. But that's what Yehuda heard. What God? What morality? What ethics? You're in big trouble. And that's what's so devastating. And now I'll say it again. With Yosef, it's not an accident. It's been a setup from the very beginning. And Yosef is very formidable. Yosef is so formidable because he understands everything and he saw everything. And let's just go back to see, to be able to end at least for today. Yosef knows dreams come true. And that's the Ramban that you mentioned before. Because for Yosef, the dreams are more than dreams. The Ramban tells us that for Yosef, the dreams are, in fact, prophecy. Yosef knows they're going to take place. They have to take place. They will take place, and they do take place. When we go back to his very first dream in Source 22, Yosef says, you will bow down to my stalks. You will come and buy food from me. Meaning, for Yosef, he sees this. He knows it's going to happen. When he hears Paro's dream, click, there it is. But for Yosef, this isn't a surprise. Of course, that's what's going to happen. He knew this from the time he had his very first dream. That's going to happen. And his brother's response is really wonderful. And back in Source 22, Pasuk Chet, Vayomer lo echav hamaloch timloch aleinu? Are you going to be our king? Imashol timsholban? What's the extra language? So this is the very famous comment of the Vilna Gaon. He says it on the verse, Ki la Hashem hamlucha umoshel bagoyim. So he says the difference between a moshel versus a melech is a melech is inaugurated. A melech is accepted. A moshel is a ruler, whether you like it or not. So what do the brothers say to Yosef? Are you going to become our king? Are we going to anoint you? Are we going to accept you? Are we going to coronate you? And what's their response? It's not going to happen. And then what did they say? Are you going to rule over us? Are you going to lord over us? And what's the answer? Yeah, it's going to happen. Are we going to bow down to your food? What's the answer? Yeah. And for Yosef, this is obvious because all the dreams do come true. But at the very end of that, after the second dream, what does it say? V'yikna'u bo echav, at the very end of 22, Pasuk Yud Aleph, they were jealous of him. V'aviv shamar et adavar. And their father, now what does the word shamar mean? Shamar is a very interesting term. So we're going to use the Chizkuni. And the only reason we can use the Chizkuni is because I remembered the Chizkuni. But I'll show you how I remembered it. Take a look at it. Chizkuni 23 says, V'yigar bo aviv, which when it's earlier, it says that the verse before, he gives him musar. He says, no, what is this? V'yigar bo aviv. V'afal pike, nonetheless, v'aviv shamar t'davar. So I still haven't translated shamar. Yodea haya, Yaakov knew, shiudvim atidim liga alehim. He knew that these things would happen. Avakadei lahashkit hakin'ah shevineyem ga'arbo. That his yelling at him, saying, what is this, was only in order to quiet down the situation in the house, to diffuse the anger or the jealousy in the house. But Yaakov knew. Now look at the Chizkuni, look at source 24, a verse that hopefully you remember. Shamor et yom ha-shabbat l'kadsho. So in the first Aseret HaDibrot, it says, Zachor et yom ha-shabbat l'kadsho. In the second Aseret HaDibrot, it says, Shamor. So look at the Chizkuni on the word Shamor. Aviv Shamar et Davar. Source 25. Shomer et ha-shabbat lashon. What does it mean? It's the same terminology, Va'aviv Shamar et Davar. What does that mean? Himtin mi ba'od yom, matai tavo shabbat l'kadsho. That Shamor et Yom HaShabbat, according to the Chizkuni, means you should be standing with anticipation. It means anticipation. To keep this in your heart, Shamor et Yom HaShabbat is Aviv Shamar et HaDavar. He was waiting with anticipation. When will this happen? And he explains, that's like what Rav Yana in the Gemara. Shriyam et Tatef, he would wrap himself up before Shabbat Va'omer, Bo'i Kala, Bo'i Kala. Anticipation of the holiness of the day. And he says, that's what it means. Vaviv Shamar Tedavar, he was waiting with anticipation, when will this happen? Because he knew, he gave Yosef the royal clothing, he gave him the coat, he knew it was going to happen. So the other one who knew it was going to happen, just as much as Yosef. So the two of them know what's going to happen, they know the dreams are going to come true. For Yosef, again, the way you phrased it in the beginning is really the question. Is this prophecy? Is this insight? Is this a combination? Yosef knew from the first moment all the other steps that are going to take place, even though you can say, but that's impossible, that he can know all the steps, but he constantly sees. And he constantly refers back to the other ones in terms of the symbolism. Yosef and the brothers over here, again, and the point that we're ending over here is the point that Yosef keeps dropping hints. He keeps letting them know that I'm Yosef. He keeps letting them know that they are immoral. He keeps on letting them know they've done something wrong. He keeps trying to let them know that they left somebody behind. He keeps trying to get into their psyche and saying, you know, doesn't this make sense? But the brothers have the same ambivalence. I'll say it again. It's the same thing as the Sar HaMashkim. Same thing as Potiphar. They know of the great capability, but they're absolutely terrified. They see the power, but they want to deny that it's there. They want to forget him, because the reality of who he is too frightening. And just like the Sar HaMashkim forget him, that's what the brothers want to do as well. Because if a person like Yosef really is as capable and really is as talented as he in fact is, it's the most frightening thing in the world. But the answer is that he is. And I just want to go back to what I said before. And that really is the power and the beauty of Tzion. And that's why the Jewish people are compared to Yosef, and that's why Jerusalem is compared to Yosef, because it really does have this power, and it really does have this beauty, and it really does generate this, it's not an ambiguity, it's this love-hate relationship which the entire world has, because who Yosef is represents something deep inside of our entire people, and our country, and our city of Yerushalayim, because that's what Yosef really is.